Hello, fellow mortals, and welcome to True Crime Talkers San Diego, episode number 29. I am your host, or perhaps for this episode, you may call me your ghost host. That's right, Halloween is right around the corner, so I've conjured up a ghost story to tell you all. And what better setting for a story to start than an old San Diego hotel, a place where people have come to stay the night for decades. But what happens when a guest never checks out? Well, stay tuned to find out. Before we get into today's ghost story, I want to give an important update on a case that I've been following since the start of this podcast. I'm sure most of you have heard of the missing Chula Vista mom, Maya Miliete, whether it be from the news or from previous episodes where I've told her story. A huge update has finally come out in her case this month, but before we get into that, I want to refresh our memories and have a little recap of what has already happened within her case. On the evening of January 7th, Maya goes missing. The story was that she may have had an argument with her husband, Larry, and left the house to go for a walk to cool down. But sadly, she never returned. On January 9th, the CVPD are called by Maya's sister to report her disappearance. A search party is sent out in the surrounding trails near her home, where she was known to frequently hike. By January 23rd, the police obtain a search warrant for Maya's home, where her and her husband Larry and her three children live. By early February, Larry gets a lawyer and is no longer cooperating with the police. Maya's family says Larry begins distancing himself from the rest of her family, but that they couldn't imagine that he would do anything to her. Later in February, Maya's family and friends held two search parties in different parts of San Diego County, one in Dehesa and the other in Elfin Forest Recreational Reserve, but sadly, there were no signs of her. On April 21st, the CVPD said that it's working with the FBI, the San Diego County District Attorney, and the Naval Criminal Investigative Service on this case. On May 5th, Larry Miliete is served with a temporary gun violence restraining order. This is a court order that prohibits the person from having in his or her custody or control, own or possess, or receive any firearms or ammunition while the order is in effect. The petitioner must convince a judge that the person to be restrained, aka Larry, possesses a significant danger in the near future of either causing personal injury to him or herself or another person by having in their custody, control, owning, purchasing, or receiving of a firearm. On May 7th, a second search warrant is obtained and the police are seen loading boxes of items from the Miliete home into a white van. On July 1st, another search of the home was done, and then on July 22nd, Larry is named as a person of interest. On October 19th, Larry Miliete is arrested for the murder of his wife. At his arraignment on the 21st, Larry pled not guilty. Apparently, Maya and Larry had had some ups and downs in the relationship, and that they always tried to work it out for their children's sake, but things were getting really bad and Maya was actually looking to divorce him. It's just a really sad story that she had to go missing and that Larry couldn't just accept having this divorce and moving on for the sake of both Maya and their children's sake. You know, like, I don't understand how someone could resort to violence, nevertheless murder, when it comes to your family. Like, it's just such a sad story. Early on, everyone suspected that Larry had something to do with this because, you know, the spouse is always the first person people look to. And I know early on, I definitely had suspicions, but the family, especially Maya's family, said, you know, not to pin it on him just yet because they don't have enough information, and like they said, they couldn't imagine that Larry would do something like this. I mean, who would imagine that someone could kill their spouse and their mother of their young children? I'm just glad that there is at least one question answered, and that, yes, Larry is somehow involved in her disappearance, and I just hope that he won't drag out this investigation too long, and that he'll actually take responsibility for any crime that he's committed. With him pleading not guilty, that just makes me nervous that he's not going to do that, but I just hope he changes his mind, because he definitely owes his children and Maya's family the answers that they are seeking, and I just pray that they get them. Now, this was a huge update in this case that I, of course, will continue to follow, and I will keep you guys updated on it as well. So let's just keep our fingers crossed and see what happens in these coming days with all the court proceedings and all of that. Picture this. Our ghostly tale takes place one late evening in a haunted hotel. Okay, well, don't picture the lightning because, let's face it, it scarcely rains, nevertheless has lightning storms in San Diego. But what I do want you to picture is an old hotel built with red bricks and features grand Victorian-style windows and balconies from the street view. Large white letters on the side of the building spell out the Horton Grand Hotel. This building is described as being an elegant, ornate Victorian structure that was modeled after the Innsbruck Inn in Vienna, Austria. Now, this hotel was built in 1887 as part of a building boom that followed after San Diego opened their first transcontinental railroad connection in 1885. At this time, San Diego had just become a bustling little city, and a nice hotel was definitely a necessity. After years and decades go by of people checking in and out of the hotel, the city of San Diego purchases the Grand Horton Hotel in the 1970s. Now, going from the 1880s to the 1970s is quite a stretch of time, and the city was definitely due to rebuild some sections of downtown San Diego. Because of this new remodel, it was decided that the old hotel needed to go. But the Grand Horton Hotel wasn't the only building to go either. The nearby Brooklyn Calls Saddlery Hotel, which was named after its prominent saddle and harness shop on the first floor, was also set to be destroyed. The city builders didn't want to completely demolish these historic sites, so instead, both hotels were carefully taken apart brick by brick. Can you imagine that? Like, they literally numbered every brick and took them out and put them back together. That's really cool and kind of crazy to think about. So as they were taking apart the hotels, they then had this brilliant idea to combine both the Grand Horton and the Brooklyn Call into one spectacular 4-story, 110-room, and 24-suite hotel that we see today. With such a long and rich history behind both hotels, historians successfully lobbied to have them saved in an effort to retain San Diego's past. Now, as you can imagine, hotels are usually a luxurious place to stay, but we also know that certain shady things often occur in hotels, things such as cheating and murder. Now, add a couple hundreds of years, and a hotel is sure to acquire some paranormal residents, and the Horton Grand Hotel is definitely no exception. Now, the hotel is said to have several prominent spirits within its walls, but today's tale centers on a man named Roger Whittaker. There are actually two theories on how Roger came to be an indefinite guest at the Horton Grand Hotel. The first theory is that in 1843, before the hotel was even built. Roger fell in love with a beautiful woman and asked her to be his wife. Now, Roger's soon-to-be father-in-law did not approve of this match and eventually shot Roger dead. His body was then dumped in a swampy area near where the hotel stands today. Spirits are often known to roam this area, and Roger apparently decided to check into the Horton Hotel. Well, that's the first theory. This next theory is actually a little more widely believed to be the true story of poor Roger. In this story, Roger does indeed check into the hotel and stays in room 309. After unpacking his things, he goes to a gambling joint just down the street from the hotel for a round of cards. Now, poor Roger is down on his luck and gets caught cheating in a card game. The men are obviously very upset at this and begin to beat him up as payback. Another man pulls out his gun and begins shooting at Roger. Roger barely escapes with his life and flees back to room 309, where he decides to hide in his room's armoire. The gang of angry men follow and eventually catch up with Roger in his room, shooting him through the armoire's door. The men leave after they've gotten their payback, and Roger lays slumped inside that armoire, dead, never able to check out. After his murder, guests have actually reported seeing Roger Whittaker's lingering presence in room 309, as well as the adjoining hallway. Thankfully, Roger is not an evil ghost in any way, but he is a bit mischievous and does make himself known to the living, and he's actually had several sightings. One woman reported seeing him in the nearby hallway of room 309. She said he looked so real to her that she even asked him if he knew where the ice machine was. Now, sadly, he didn't give her any directions. Rude. But to her surprise, he merely vanished right in front of her eyes. Oh my gosh, I can't imagine how freaked out that woman must have been after that. I mean, forget the ice machine, I'd be checking out. Stat. Other signs and phenomena of his spirit is that guests have reported that room 309 can become very warm, and this warm air is unaffected by any air conditioning or by opening of a window. Now, I found that to be a little odd since, you know, most people say ghosts make a room colder, but the fact that the temperature is unaffected definitely gives it that paranormal quality. Other signs of his spirit within room 309 are your more typical hauntings. You know, light switches having a mind of their own, items getting moved around, particularly in the bathroom. And maids have even reported seeing the indentation of a body laying on the bed shortly after making the bed up. Which, I'm not gonna lie, that definitely freaks me out and just gives me the chills. Guests staying in room 309 have also reported being awoken by either the bed being shaken or by the opening of the armoire doors. The armoire doors would even violently open at random times, which is totally not creepy at all after, you know, someone died in one of those. Oh my gosh. And lastly, hotel staff have walked by a vacant room 309 and hear the sound of shuffling cards from within. But of course, when they open the door, the room is completely empty. Ooh, that just gives me chills to imagine, and is definitely one of the reasons why people think the second theory applies, because, you know, cards, gambling, it kind of has to do with his death and what he did often in life. Now, like I mentioned earlier, Roger is not the only spirit to be reported at the hotel. Apparently, the hotel was relocated to an area in the Gaslamp District where brothels used to be. The owner of the old brothel where the hotel now stands is Ida Bailey, and her spirit has also been seen within the hotel walls. She's known to have a more friendly presence, though, and she often appears as a white translucent mist, or one of the many cold spots that are felt throughout the hotel. Several other spirits may reside in the Grand Horton Hotel as well, for it's been accounted by many that apparitions dressed in the 19th century attire regularly wander the hotel. They're often known to cause lights to turn on and off, for doors to open and close, and have also been heard to have conversations amongst themselves. Phantom footsteps and unattached laughter can also be heard even when no other living soul is around. Apparitions have been seen floating downstairs, wandering the halls, and even entering guest rooms. So, if you find yourself staying at the Horton Grand Hotel, you will be sure to be dazzled by its Victorian furniture and charm. You may even hear the shuffle of Roger's cards as you make your way down the hall to your room. So enjoy your stay, and keep a lookout for the paranormal. And whatever you do, do not stay in room 309 if you're afraid of murdered ghosts. Well, everyone, that wraps it up for this Halloween episode. I thought I would do something a little fun and spooky today, and I hope you guys enjoyed that little ghost story, and hopefully it's one that you haven't heard before. I know I hadn't. I was trying to look up any ghosts that were murdered since, you know, this is a true crime show, and the story of Roger Whittaker was definitely one that stood out to me, and one that I don't think is well known. Let me know if you have any other murdered ghost suggestions within San Diego. I would definitely love to hear them, and maybe next year I'll do even more episodes like this. I think that would be really fun. Also, let me know if you have heard of this story before, or if you've even stayed at the Grand Horton Hotel. But if you have stayed at the hotel and you want to share a story about your experience there, leave me a voice message through the Anchor platform. It's pretty much just like leaving a voicemail. I would love to hear your stories, and who knows, I might even play it in the next episode. That'd be really cool. Anyways, don't forget to rate and review the show on iTunes. Links are down below. And I hope you all have a happy Halloween. But until next time, stay safe.